Thursday, 4:49 p.m. Tony and Mad Max, we are here. We are live, WSJU Radio. Yeah, man, just got out of the class, got out of the Zoom. It was a longer class than expected. It was good, though. Taking an on-camera digital presentations class, and the professor offers a lot of knowledge that could even help me out with my career and different things, and it was interesting.
That was awesome, man.
How's your day going? Did you have work?
Me? Nah. I've been off today and yesterday.
Taking it easy pretty much?
Yeah, pretty much.
A couple things we got to discuss. I mean, what do you want to start?
I can't do that freaking Robin Hood thing with the GameStop, dude. I know very little. I know very little about stocks. All I know from that is like the Robin Hood app, like stopped people from buying stocks. So you can only sell stocks. And like, it's been like, I heard it's just a complete, just crap show over there. So
yeah, Steve Cohen supposedly involved. Is that what I'm hearing? The owner of the Mets?
Apparently in some way. I mean, I just don't know.
It's so confusing, man. I just want the Mets. Just go get Bauer. They're such a disgrace. Like, you thought the Mets are...
They're a disgrace already.
You just thought... No, but I'm serious. Because you thought the Mets were going to really just finish this offseason out strong. I mean, there's still time, but you start with Francisco Lindor. You make the trade for them at Carrasco. And then you have... I think they signed Trevor May and McCann. But you think that they're going to be making these big moves, and psych, they don't. They lose out on George Springer. They lose out on Brad Hand. Brad Hand signs with the Nationals. The Mets are just, they've just become to a complete stop, and they can't do that. You got to finish the offseason strong. Don't go halfway. Go all the way in. It's time now. You promised this fan base, Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, you promised this fan base a World Series within 5 years. You missed out on a key center fielder. They could still get Jackie Bradley, even though we wanted George Springer. Now Trevor Bauer's out there. Close the freaking deal. You traded Steven Matz to the Blue Jays, got a couple prospects, a couple pitchers and whatever. Not that add up to Trevor Bauer at all, but now close the deal with Bauer. Get it done now.
And honestly, Bauer doesn't really have that much of a race to get him. He set his number so high that like
no one can get him but the Mets. And the
not
Mets,
that many teams that want him.
Yep. And the Mets are really a team on the rise now, because now they're getting a lot of money in with this new owner. So now we can start spending like the Yankees. And they've got to make moves like that. You want to win games. You want to be competitive. You want to be mentioned in that those top five teams in the league. You got to make these moves. Bring in Trevor Bauer. Trevor Bauer would be a great addition to this lineup. He would solidify that starting five.
That's really true, man. I mean...
get it done. I mean, I keep looking on Twitter. Nothing. Then someone will come along and snatch him up. Get it done, Steven. Get it done. And then we can just look forward to something. Let's look forward to the next season here. Let's look forward to April. Let's look forward to it.
Absolutely, man. For once. Absolutely. But what was it? Let's talk a little bit about obviously some football. Got some basketball.
Knicks are just imploding.
Yeah, I was going to talk about Tanaka from the Yankees. Going back to Japan. Let's start with that because you brought up the Mets. I should do like the Yankee side because that's really the only real Yankee story today.
Are you concerned about him going back to Japan? Because Yankee fans love Tanaka.
Well, he's already back in Japan. He just signed.
That's
back
right.
Today.
He's back with. But are you concerned that the fact that he's back there?
Nah, not really. I mean, he was asking for a good amount of money, $15 million. I wasn't going to give that to Tanaka. spent seven seasons with the team. He was somebody that, he signed back with the team that he played his whole career with, the Rakuten Golden Eagles.
Yeah.
And he's like a hero over there. That's how most like Japanese baseball players are to like their teams. Like they're like superheroes.
Yep.
Big time. Like Nomo, Hideki Matsui, Ichiro, guys are larger than life people. And like Tanaka, you know, being somebody that brought a title to the Rakuten Golden Eagles back in 2000, I think it was 2013. He is someone so beloved over there. When he was signed to the Yankees, I remember this guy was the talk of baseball. He was the talk of the baseball world. This was going back to 2000. This was the off season after the 2013 season, going into 2014. Tanaka just accomplished a 25 win season with Rakuten. He only lost like I think like 3 or 4 games, and his ERA was like 1.5. Like his last season with Rakuten was just off the charts. Like serious dude, like 25 wins, ERA under like well under 2. And he, like in that Japan series, the Golden Eagles played the Uramori Giants. The Uramori Giants are like the Yankees of Japan. That's the team that Hideki Matsui played for before he came over to the States. So the Uramori Giants took the Golden Eagles to Game 7 of that Japan series. And Tanaka pitched, I think, Game 6, and he won the game. But in Game 7, they were going into the 9th inning with the Golden Eagles leading, I think it was like 3-0 or 4-0. Mm-hmm. They bring Tanaka in the 9th inning to close out the series and win the Japan series for the Golden Eagles. It's one of the more remarkable moments in Japanese professional baseball history. Like Tanaka has always been a bulldog pitcher. He signed with the Yankees in that offseason. He got posted to the major leagues. The Yankees won the posting fee. Well, no, the Yankees paid the posting fee, which I think is like $20 million.
Of course they would.
That's so you could at least get access to the free agent. Like you can't even touch a Japanese player without paying the posting fee, which at that time I believe was $20 million. So they ended up finalizing the contract with the Yankees. It was like 7 years, $175 million, which you think about for a top flight pitcher who they thought was going to be top flight. Like that's pretty cheap. Back then it was a lot of money, but like now it's just like chump change pretty much for a top flight pitcher.
Yeah.
Like look at what freaking Gerrit Cole got. Look at what Trevor Bauer is trying to get. So I remember at that time Tanaka was really supposed to be like, he was supposed to be the ace. He was supposed to be like a top 3 pitcher in baseball just by the fact of what he did in Japan. Like this guy had so much hype around him. They had designated days for his starts. They called them like Tanaka time or like Tanaka Tuesdays. Like people were saying, oh, this is must see television. And he started out really good. He won like he won 10 of his first 12 starts. He was 10-2 with like an ERA below 2. Guy was filthy.
I remember it. The city was going crazy.
His splitter was off the charts. He had one of the most filthy split fastballs in like forever. Then somewhere in like midsummer, he ends up getting hurt. It was a game in Cleveland against the Indians. It was something with his elbow. And obviously with a pitcher, any injury that involves the elbow, you're starting to get shook.
Yep.
Found out that he had a partially torn UCL in his elbow, in his throwing elbow. And at that point, you're just like, well, this is, well, this is a complete just disaster.
Yep.
Because the UCL tear, you just automatically think Tommy John surgery, out the rest of the year, out the entire next season. We'll see you in 2016, you know, 2 years from now. But like, fortunately, like the doctors told Masahiro, like, you could have the surgery if you want, but it's really not recommended for your case. Like you could,
and he didn't get it.
Never got it.
Yep.
7 years he pitched with a partially torn UCL. He finished his Yankee career 32 games above 500. I think that's 78-46. ERA of 3.74. Incredible in the postseason. Really was a really was a mad dog on the mound. Like, he was a very reliable pitcher too. He had his fair share of injuries, you know, shoulder injuries, leg injuries, stuff like that, but nothing really too serious. And when he was on the mound, dude, he pretty much gave it his all. He would give you 6 or 7 innings. Even sometimes he would even go the full 9 innings and give you a good complete game shutout.
Yep.
So, like, and he came to the Yankees at the age of 25. He was a young kid. He was 25 years old, fresh off. Goodness. People always said that he threw a ton of innings in Japan, and that's why he ended up tearing his UCL the way he did. Because when you have that much mileage on your elbow, it's going to blow.
Wear and tear. Yeah.
Yeah. But he was 25 when he came here.
Yep.
So now 7 years later, what is that? I think he's what, like 32? 31. What's 3 minus 35? 32. I'm
32,
right.
You're right, yeah.
32. So he could have still gone. He still could have had a career here. But I really think that he either wanted to go back to Japan or play with the Yankees, and the Yankees weren't gonna give in to his demands. Which is fine, you know. 7 years is a really good run.
Yep.
But Masa's gone. Can't believe it. And I guess most of the fan base just thanks him.
Yep.
He never brought a title here. That's the thing. But one pitcher can't do that for you. That's not how baseball works.
Nope. You need now. Well, the Mets, they're just going to be like a freak team with that rotation. They have 5 decent pit. They have 3 really good ones, and then 2 guys that can get the job done. You could barely. There's teams out there that don't even have 1 good pitcher. I think it usually takes 2 good pitchers and 3 that can get the job done. But the Mets have 3 that can get the job done and 2 good pitchers that can solidify it.
Pretty much. But let's do, you know what? Let's do the football, because the Deshaun Watson thing now is really like starting to heat up here. He just formally announced that he's requested a trade from Houston.
Now, can the Jets trade for him right now, or they got to wait till free agency?
I think they could trade for him anytime. I mean, I don't know, like, what they were really like. When's free agency? March?
Let me check. I think it's the 29th of March. Let me see. When does NFL free agency start? Because the draft is April 29th. When does NFL free agency? March 18th. Wait. No. That's 2020. Why didn't they give me the new? March 17th. I was right. March 17th.
It would make sense for him to be traded now. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't want to wait, but
Jets gonna pull the trigger.
Listen, Adam Schefter said this morning with Mike Greenberg, he said, don't get your hopes up with the Jets. What that could mean is I get that the Jets probably have the best package to send to Houston, but is Deshaun going to want to go to a situation where it's, you know, where you just don't know with the Jets, where you have destinations like San Francisco, great team all around, very, very good coach. Like, or I heard that the Panthers are looking for some, are looking to maybe trade.
I thought about this, man, because I know we talked about it last week. I looked at the division. I analyzed the players in the division. The Jets are not going to win any games with Sam Darnold. Get Sam off the team. I hate Sam. I say it every week. Get that stupid jerk off the team. You look at the other quarterbacks that you have in a division. The Patriots are probably going to make a run for Stafford or someone else. They're going to find Mac Jones. They're going to find their answer because that is who the Patriots are. Then you look at the other two teams. You have Tua Tagovailoa, who's going to be, I think he's going to be a great quarterback, even though there's all these doubters and haters, and I like Tua. And then you have Josh Allen in Buffalo. So you know what? If you're the Jets, you actually have to pull the trigger for Deshaun Watson, because how are you going to keep up with that division if you have someone like Sam? I'd rather have Wilson. Is it Kyle Wilson?
Zach Wilson.
Why am I saying? Okay, thank you. Zach Wilson.
Yeah, out of BYU.
Or Fields. I'd rather have one of those quarterbacks instead of Sam. Sam is not getting nothing done. He's not getting anything done. Sam, his time has run its course. Get him out. Send him back to USC. Maybe, I don't know, just ship him out. But you need someone to really compete with these quarterbacks in this division, because these are playoff caliber quarterbacks we're talking about here. Tua lost to Buffalo. He was right there on the verge.
I mean, I get I know your hatred of Sam.
I hate Sam. Oh, my God.
Now, the coach has been noncommittal, but he said that Darnold has a hell of a ton of potential.
No, he doesn't. It's like a fairy tale. There's no potential. We would have seen something. By now.
But that's why I think that a trade with the Jets just makes so much sense for Houston right now. Because, like, I feel like they could work with Darnold.
Yeah, you know what? Ship him to Houston. And the thing about this is why it makes sense for the Jets and why it may not, because you're giving up so much draft capital. But when do the Jets get the draft right? That's the real question. Look at all the draft prospects that have been busts. Pretty much everyone. Darrell Revis was just a lucky find. Jamal Adams could have been something. He didn't want to be anything, but, you know, whatever. We shouldn't have went and picked a safety that high in the draft. They should have got Patrick Mahomes that year. They should have got Deshaun Watson that year.
You're saying a lot of what ifs. I mean, like, all the other teams could have taken those quarterbacks too.
Yeah, they could have. I'm saying it right now. The Jets have to get it right, but the question mark is, will they? And that's why I think, you know what? As much as I hate to give up all this draft capital, if you're not going to get it right, you might as well give up some picks here. I'm only going to go with two first-round picks, and then you can have your pick of the litter with the other picks. You're only getting two first-rounders from me. That's it. As far as I'm going with the first-round picks. So if you're not going to, even, you know what I'm saying? And if they're not going to get it right, just pull the trigger and get Watson. Get your franchise quarterback.
Mm-hmm. 100% agree. So let's shift the basketball here. Let's do like Nets first here.
Yeah, Nets are 5-2 since the start of James Harden.
Mm-hmm. They had a nice win against the Hawks yesterday. I mean, like, people get so, like, weird. They're like, oh, well, you took the Hawks to overtime. Dude, a win is a win is a win. Like, where did, like, why is that phrase just all of a sudden just being, like, just, like, thrown out? It's all these dumb Laker fans, dude. Like, I just don't get it. And the freaking Lakers lost to the Sixers last night. So, I mean, why couldn't you beat Philly? But Brooklyn really... Listen, they are going to outscore you. That's just how they're designed. It's just that defense that is just killer.
Because the Nets only won by 3 points. Is that right last night?
I think like five.
They won by 3 or 5 because they played the Hawks.
Yeah, the Hawks have a really good scoring team. You got Trae Young, you got John Collins. Gallinari was on. Gallinari was hitting threes last night.
Talk about ex-Knicks.
Yep. Cam Reddish was hitting shots. Like, they were really doing good. Clint Capella played really good. I think Clint Capella is like a top three rebounder in the sport right now. And they have a great defense.
Yep.
The Hawks have the second rate defense right behind the Knicks. So
yeah, which is insane. I don't know how they have the number one defense. They just gave up a huge lead they had against Utah the other night. Where'd that number one defense go?
It got stopped, dude. But like, the Nets rim protection is just garbage.
And DeAndre, I said this, Jordan, I was having this conversation with someone the other day. Jared Allen, he should have never gotten traded. That was your future.
I feel like that was just like the one that had to hurt, you know, it to make a trade like they did. They had to give up some sort of capital, and Jared Allen was a casualty of that capital.
Paying for it because they needed him. He was well presence.
They did. And I like DeAndre Jordan. He's a hell of a player, but damn, there's just something about him. Like, he just doesn't like want to like play hard for some reason.
He's been burnt out. He's been burnt out since the Clippers.
Really,
with the Mavs. He played 1 year with the Knicks. Yeah, he was just garbage on the Knicks. You know, DeAndre Jordan, I think it's time to call it a career for him. I thought Jared Allen was the best player for the Nets in the center position, but
he was good.
Yeah.
Now, the one hope that I have for the Nets right now, the Nets have three open roster spots. They just signed a center, a big man off of the Sixers G League affiliate. I forget his name. So they're bringing this guy in to help, you know, give some height on this team. I mean, the Nets are not a big team. The two biggest guys on the team are DeAndre and KD. You know, like, Kyrie's definitely not a big. Harden's definitely not a big. Everybody, Joe Harris, definitely not a big.
No.
Like, so what I'm hoping for is the buyout market. See what sort of stars get bought out here. Somebody like Andre Drummond on the Cavaliers. Guy is owed like $20-something million. He's in a walk year. Like, why not? I think that the Cavs are probably going to buy him out, and he's probably going to join the Nets. And that would solve so many problems, dude.
You could take Mitchell Robinson from us. I'm kind of through with him.
He's not going anywhere.
No, he's not.
And then we should transition to the Knicks here. Why are you already through with Mitchell Robinson?
I just don't see anything. He gets in a lot of foul trouble. I've been seeing that. There's just nothing that excites me. He's only good for alley-oops. He's just not that starting caliber center. He's just not. In my opinion, he's not that starting caliber center. He just really isn't right now. I think he's got time to develop and grow, but I haven't seen anything that's wowed me. And RJ Barrett's just so inconsistent.
Is it because these guys just don't like keep the pedal to the metal for all four quarters?
It's probably why. Like Mitchell Robinson, I don't know. Like, I don't know why Knicks fans love him so much. I haven't seen anything. It's kind of like Jet fans with Sam. Like, I don't know what you see that I that I don't. I just don't know what these Knicks fans see. I just don't see anything that impresses me. I think he could be a really good player. It's just I don't see it yet, though.
I mean, listen. They gave a really good game to the Jazz.
In the first half. Then the second half, they look like the same old Knicks.
Well, because they don't have that much talent on the team. Like, that's what the talent is.
Austin Rivers, would he score 25 points in the first quarter or the first half? Austin Rivers with the 25 points in the first half.
Oh yeah. Huh.
Where did that scoring go in the second half? It disappeared.
And I was questioning, and I was questioning why Austin Rivers doesn't start.
I think Emmanuel quickly should start.
I think so too, over Elfrid Payton.
Yeah,
but God. But like, why don't these guys like start? Like, why doesn't Austin Rivers start at the one when he's on? Like, he's draining threes like you wouldn't believe.
Yep.
And you thought that that player was trash. He comes in here and he'll drop like 25 points in the first half. And you're like, whoa. But then he gets shut down.
Yeah. Like, where did he go? they made the adjustment in halftime. That's what
That's what like good teams do.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, man, Thibodeau keeps the team rolling. The team never quits. The game before the Utah game, I forget who they played. Didn't they lose by like three? Like he keeps these guys playing.
Yeah, what was it that game? I can't remember the game. Was it the Sacramento Kings?
I don't even remember.
I can't even remember, man. It's so many Knicks games and so many losses at the same time. But if they actually had talent on this team would be dangerous because of Tom Thibodeau's coaching. That's what they need, though. They need the talent. They need that star player that can work in that system that won't disrupt the chemistry on the team, who isn't the cancer in that locker room. They need someone that could really just flow great with the team.
100% agree. I 100% agree. But is there anything else like on the docket?
I'm trying to think. Just looking forward to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the Super Bowl.
We'll probably do more talk of that next week.
Yeah, because we got our matchup here, Brady and Mahomes. Can't wait for that. That's what, man, you talk about people say that the NBA, not the NBA, the NFL, like, rigs games to get certain matchups.
Talk about the Packer game.
Man.
Freaking no calls. Like, no calls for that Packers team, man. There was no calls. But as soon as the Buccaneers are on the field on offense, they get all the calls.
Well, don't forget, dude, Matt LaFleur made the bad play call.
Oh, yeah. How about that?
Going for the field goal instead of trying to score and get up and do the two-point conversion.
Yep. Nope. Didn't do that. And it would have made more sense because they'd be pinned at the one-yard line or the five-yard line right there.
Mm-hmm.
So why not go for it? Because then you may have a better chance to stop them because they're playing right from the end zone and you get pressured a lot more in there. And you play tight. Because you are in such a tight space and you could basically cause a safety or even a touchdown if it's a fumble.
Yeah, pretty much.
Unbelievable, but, man. I feel bad for Rodgers. I really do. Aaron Rodgers is my favorite quarterback in the league. He is really like the Packers. And that's probably a second interim team. And when I'm not rooting for the Jets because they're so horrible, I do enjoy watching the Green Bay Packers play. I've always liked Aaron Rodgers. And it's just a shame he can't get his second ring.
Yeah, now we've got so many quarterbacks on the market, man. Like,
yeah, and Sam can get on that market too.
He probably will, man. He probably will. But listen, like, if you don't have anything else, like, topic for like tonight, man, this was what, like, a quick 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was a quick 30 minutes. We could go into it, just what you're seeing, the bills being passed by Biden. Executive orders.
He's been passing a lot.
Yeah, stacks and stacks and stacks.
But I don't really know much like about them. I just like read that like he passed like 32 executive orders in the first like 2 weeks.
Or how about the police brutality incident? Did you see this on the news when the cops made the woman and her children get on the ground?
Oh no. Where was this?
It was footage. It was on MSNBC. I saw it. These two cops made this black woman and her children lay on the ground and they wouldn't let them get up. And the kids were crying.
Unreal. It's not going to stop, man. And you know what? Like, Joe Biden's going to have to work out some sort of like legislation or something like that. Work with governors here.
He's going to have to.
Police reform.
Get it done. I told you, I sent you the Attorney General's tweet. They're going to start doing things in these police departments, and they better make it quick. They better make it quick.
Pretty much have to.
Because they're infiltrated. How about what you sent me yesterday for just a fun, let's do a fun segment of the show here with the Rob Zombie's breakfast, Rob Zombie Halloween's breakfast scene.
That's a classic.
You said Ronnie deserved his own movie.
He does deserve his own movie. Like, why did he have to get like killed off?
He duct tapes him and slits his throat.
Yeah, my God.
What was the best line from that breakfast scene?
Oh my God, there's so many. Oh my God. It's just like, take off that damn mask, boy. Yeah. He runs around here like a little bitch. Yeah. Oh my God. I'm like, hello, Michelle, my belle.
Yeah, I know. Oh man, my God.
That movie just wasn't like,
and the second one was worse. Halloween 2 by Rob Zombie was worse.
Completely just rewrote the whole thing.
Yeah. Horrible.
Horrible.
Bad, it was like a drug dream.
It was.
It really was like a drug dream. It was. I mean, just look at it. Like, what's going on there? You have the mother with a freaking pony or a horse. What was it? You saw that?
Yeah, like some like ghost, like phantom crap. Like, what is that?
Barry Sims in Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers. We talked about him.
Oh, yeah, the father?
Yeah. No, that's
The Curse of Michael Myers?
That's the father is, what's his name? What's the father's name? Is it? It's John. John Strode.
Yeah. Something like that, yeah.
But the radio host in that
is Barry Sims?
Yeah.
Okay, it's an okay movie. You just gotta roll with it.
Yeah, it's just, it's awkward. It's just, it's one of those movies because you just get off of Halloween 5. Then you land on Curse of Michael Myers, and it's just like, the film, it's almost as though the film thinks it belongs, but the audience is trying to catch up with it. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Halloween 6, you get that vibe from it. Like, the film thinks it makes sense, but its audience doesn't.
100% not. I mean, they're just thrown into like back to the Myers house, and we're like, oh, like who are these people? Like, yep. You're not introduced to anybody. Like, who is the main character? Do we ever know who she is?
No, I don't even know who she is. She's just the daughter of Deborah and John Strode. John Strode, you just keep slipping her the cash.
But the first off, the Strode family never lived in like the Myers house. Like they had like the Strodes had their own house that was up the street.
Yep. I think they bought it because no one else would. Because remember in the first one, Strode Realty, they sold houses.
Oh yeah. Realty, yeah. They and then wasn't it like Halloween, like what was it? Halloween 4 and 5, that house was just like a completely different house.
Yeah, people call it the Myers Mansion.
Myers Mansion.
It was like blue, remember?
But like, why are they in the house?
I don't know.
Okay, the first movie, the house is just like your regular house, and it gets like dilapidated as like the movie, as like you go into the future.
Yep.
But like, yeah, 4 and 5, like that, the house like gets bigger. It's a different house.
Yep.
I mean, like,
part 2 was the same. 3, we know the case there had nothing to do with it. 4 or 5, you see the house in 5. Mm-hmm. It, like you said, it's a different house. Then 6 is a different house. It's like it's been taken care of and remodeled.
Pretty much. I wonder what if John Carpenter had gone through with that anthology thing after Season of the Witch. I wonder what other stories he would have done.
Now, I know you're a big Halloween 4 person. Would you have wanted to see the anthology series just carry on?
It would have been cool. it would have been really cool. Like, if I would have had to have been shown what the ideas were. Like, they can't just be like bad ideas. Cause then I'll just take four, like Halloween four. That'll just take. But like, you know, I think we're good with what we've got now.
I think so. And with the first one, Halloween doesn't feel like an anthology movie. The first one, it just doesn't.
Well, no, but because it's a brand new like idea.
Where Halloween 3, does Halloween 3 feel like an anthology movie?
Nah. Well, it kind of does, yeah.
Because yeah, it does. Because, but the first one doesn't, though. That's what's crazy.
Well, because it has the same title. So if they would have kept it like Halloween, the first Halloween is about a psychopathic killer returning home and killing a bunch of people. The third one is about these warlock mask makers who like kill children. Like then that on, and then that's in it. Like those are different ideas for Halloween. It's like Twilight Zone.
Yep.
Or American Horror Story, but it's like movies predicated on a singular day of the year. So it would have been cool. It would be really cool.
I would be curious to see. I don't think John Carpenter's gonna do anything now. He's finished, but it would have been cool. But well, I mean, what a disaster series it turned out to be.
Halloween itself.
Yeah. Like I'll give you four. Like four is a decent movie. It's pretty good. It's a good movie. Like one through four. And then after that, it kind of goes downhill.
Four and five stuck with the same ideas. It kept with it.
Six is tolerable, but once you go to H2O, I mean, come on.
H2O would have been nice if they never did Resurrection.
Yep. Well, even then, I look at it, I think Halloween 2 was better than Halloween Resurrection. I mean, Halloween 2 was better than H2O.
I think so, too.
Halloween H2O.
Why did Jamie Lee Curtis have to show up at Resurrection? Was that really, like, why? Like, that really was just a slap in the face.
It was. You wasted a whole time making this movie, finally killing Michael Myers. And then you bring this terrible movie, Halloween Resurrection, and we're forced to watch it every year on AMC Fear Fest. Please.
Like, if that was supposed, like, if H2O was the real end of Michael Myers, same thing as Jason Goes to Hell, and was it the Freddy's Last Nightmare?
Oh, Freddy's Dead, the Final Nightmare?
Freddy's Dead, like, same thing. Why not keep it like that? I mean, you gotta be kidding me, man. But you're ready to wrap this?
Yeah. Well, before I end it, you brought up Jason. I mean, they killed Freddy and Jason like 20 times in those movies.
That's the thing. I've always told you that the producers were probably like. Listen, we've done this like 10 times now, but this time we really got to do it. How do you do it successfully? Sure, it may have been choppy and kind of crappy, but at least they did it. So that's that. Mm-hmm. Slasher movies worked for the 80s. There wasn't a lot of, you know, strong critics that go to theaters as there are today. There just weren't. Slasher films were never meant to be like great cinema. They just never were. Today it just wouldn't work.
But they're considered classics now, though.
They're very much classics. Plus, I think horror is different now. Horror now is a lot more psychological.
Yeah, I don't like that. I'm not a big psychological horror fan.
Like Midsommar. a horror movie like that.
Yeah, I'm not big on
Hereditary.
I watched Hereditary. I just don't like it. Like, I just, like, yeah. I like those slasher movies. I do. I enjoy that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of, like, the cult movies. Like Wicker Man. Ugh, no. I can't do those.
I'm a straight slasher guy.
Yeah.
I'll watch the supernatural and the psychological horror. I'll watch it, but my true passion for watching horror movies is those 80 slashers.
Mm-hmm. Remember this, I'll do this one last thing. Remember that movie, One Missed Call?
Oh yeah, I've seen parts of that.
What crap.
Horrible. That was,
talk about great potential from the actual previews. Like, the previews were actually pretty good.
Yeah.
But the movie, crap. How was that? Like,
yeah, that this is cinema making right now in Hollywood. This is how it's been in present day. I try to say, name what are your top five horror movies? Name me top five horror movies from the 2000s. As far as horror movies go, it's so hard. I can't sit down and make a list.
Well, there's Saw.
That's not my top five, but I'll accept that.
Saw. I don't like Final Destination. That's just like too much.
I'd consider that. Isn't Final Destination 1 like 1999 or is that 2000 exactly?
I think it's the 90s.
It is the night. Okay. Yeah, because I can't remember. I'll look it up. You keep giving
your movies. I'm just going around horror movies from the 2000s. And these are movies that I've never even seen. Orphan was pretty good. Well, mm-hmm. The Conjuring wasn't the 2000s. It was the 2010s.
Yep.
That's always that's got to be like number one. I would say Paranormal Activity has got to be like number one. Number
Final
two.
Destination was 2000. So there you go. You wouldn't consider Final Destination.
Or Paranormal Activity. That's got to be number one. That type of movie.
I think my top five horror movies of the 2000s, I'm trying to think. It may be Saw. I think Orphan's in there. I think Jeepers Creepers is in there.
Yep.
It's difficult. Like, it's very, very, like, you sit down and you look at all the movies that came out in the 2000s. It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are my three. Like, I'd have to actually think about what are the other ones. Yeah. I think I'll put Saw in my top five. Oh, well, cause you're in the 2010s now, you're splitting the two generations up. That's why I put Sinister in the 2010s. The first one.
Mm-hmm.
Paranormal Activity. I just hate those movies because it's like, I don't like those found footage, like acting films, kind of. It's like everything with a camera.
Insidious was also.
Oh, yeah, that's in there. That's in my top five. And I think two is better.
Yeah, I do too.
I'll give Insidious one and two in the top five of the 2010s. What else came out around then? I'm trying to think. I can't think. I can't really think about other horror movies that were really that great to remember.
How about House of Wax or like Dead Silence?
It's with the ventriloquist doll.
Yeah, or like Annabelle or The Grudge.
The Ring. Those movies never really impressed me, man. Like The Ring, and never a big fan of those.
28 Days Later.
No, you know my zombie movie. The classic 1968 9/11. That's the greatest zombie movie ever.
Dawn of the Dead, really good.
The original or the 2000s one?
The 2000s one, where the zombies like sprint.
They run.
They freaking run at you. They're like freaking Olympic marathon runners.
Zombies are supposed to be slow, not fast.
They freaking run.
Yeah.
completely killed off that movie, I think. But
the original Dawn of the Dead was better.
Mm-hmm.
In the '70s, Texas Chainsaw 3D.
Mm-hmm. Texas, or like the remakes of the Texas Chainsaws.
Oh, those were good, actually.
Those were pretty good.
With the sergeant from Full Metal Jacket.
Yep.
He played like the sheriff.
Sheriff. Or like the biker that like goes in to like save his girlfriend and like he just gets like wrecked.
Yeah. Or how about when he's making him do the push-ups and he's hitting him with the baton?
Yeah. He was the one character that you wanted to see like just get like murdered.
Yeah, he was. He does actually.
Does he?
He gets run over in the first one. Because the second one was the backstory more. It was kind of the prequel.
Oh yeah, that's right. You're right.
Yeah, those were good though. Those were actually for remakes, which is surprising. Those were actually good remakes.
Mm-hmm.
They were actually entertaining. But those other remakes, like how about the Nightmare on Elm Street remake?
Nightmare on Elm Street, yeah. Bad.
Can't have Freddy without Robert Englund. The yeah. Jason Friday 13th remake. I mean, Child's Play was a joke. I mean, come on.
But the Friday the 13th remake was good in the fact that there needed to not be that much substance. You yeah. didn't need to like have anything go into it.
Yep. The Child's Play remake was horrible, though.
Oh my god, animatronic. Ugh.
Of course. Horrible.
But like, alrighty, let's wrap this up.
All right.
So my socials, my Instagram is at TANOOCH96. Once again, at TANOOCH96.
Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at The Real Max, TheReelMax. Once again, TheReelMax. You can check out all the previous episodes on the YouTube channel, the visuals, sports and hip hop with DJ Mad Max, Tony and Mad Max, live every Thursday. Times vary. And yeah, and that's pretty much it. You know, check out the shows on the website too, maxrcoughlin.com, maxrcoughlin.com. We're available on all the podcast platforms, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you name it, we're on there.
All righty, guys. So thank you for tuning in. Wear a mask, wash your hands, stay distant, be safe, and thank you for tuning in. So long.
So long.